This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Wednesday, the Prime Minister calls Labor leader Anthony Albanese a loose unit for backing a minimum wage increase in line with inflation. And racism row. Former Collingwood AFL player Haritia Lumumba releases tapes of discussions with former coach Nathan Buckley.
What must it be like to feel so isolated and undermined by your employer that you need to keep recordings of conversations with them just to protect yourself?
First up today, wages, and small business operators say they won't survive if wages rise in parallel with the soaring costs of living. Labor leader Anthony Albanese says wage increases should keep pace with inflation, which is currently at just over 5%. But small businesses say their input, freight and fuel costs are already out of reach and wages would tip them too far. Rachel Mealy reports.
Graham Strang runs a workwear shop in Toowoomba on Queensland's Darling Downs.
We sell all your high-vis workwear, country clothing, work boots, embroidery, screen printing, all that sort of stuff across the board.
He says the costs of running his business have been rising rapidly.
Between all the freight changes, the overseas delays, the rising costs in all of that as well, it is certainly the cost of goods coming in has been, you know, it's anything from 10 to 15% rises. Some of our suppliers are giving us a price rise every 3 months because they're trying to work with it as well.
Graham Strang employs 14 staff and already pays them more than the award wage in order to keep them. He says a wage increase, particularly one over 5%, as Labor leader Anthony Albanese has foreshadowed, would inevitably be passed on in higher costs to the customer.
In small business, obviously, wage increases means it takes more off your bottom line. That means that the higher your wages, the more you pass it on to the consumer.
Judy Ann Thomas owns Anne's Flowers in the Melbourne suburb of Cheltenham.
Well, number one, it'll go into our margins, but then someone may lose their job because you have to, you know, pay all the other, everybody that same pay rise. So I don't know where he thinks we're going to get more money from to pay the girls or the staff.
She says soaring inflation as well as interest rate movements have turned up the heat.
Especially small business, maybe not big boys, but for small florists and, you know, supermarkets, we all have our margins, and COVID and, you know, we've all been pushed and I don't think it's all about Scott Morrison either. I think it's the world. I think the world's in doing it, not just Australia. But that's just my opinion. I think the Russia and the Ukraine and, you know, life's a bit harder now. Yeah.
The Australian Council of Social Service says people are doing it tough. Rising costs of food and housing are pushing more and more people into poverty, even those with steady employment. Dr. Peter Davidson is a principal advisor at ACOS.
Well, they have to cut back on essentials because most of the expenditure by households in the lowest 40% or so by income, many of whom rely on minimum wages, is on essentials. It's not discretionary things like overseas trips and going to the movies. It's food, it's energy costs, and above all, it's rent, which has risen by 10% in the last year, and that's going to go up further.
He says ACOS doesn't take a position on how a wage rise should be worked out, but people are bearing the brunt of rising prices.
They should increase at least by the level of inflation so that people don't fall behind. And ideally, wages in general should increase in line with inflation plus productivity, so that wage earners are sharing in the fruits of their work. And that hasn't been happening for well over a decade now. And indeed, in this year, it looks as though people will be falling behind even the increase in the cost of living.
That's ACOS Principal Advisor Dr. Peter Davidson ending that report from Rachel Mealy. The battle over wages has blown up on the election campaign trail, as we heard, with the Prime Minister accusing his challenger, Anthony Albanese, of being a loose unit on the economy. Scott Morrison says the Labor leader's call for a 5.1% pay rise or better for those on the minimum wage would push up inflation, interest rates, threaten employment and drive small businesses to bankruptcy. but Labor is relishing the fight. Our reporter David Lipson joins me now. David, good afternoon. Both leaders are leaning into this fight. Who's going to come out on top?
Sally, good afternoon. I guess we won't know for sure until probably about 9 p.m. on the evening of the 22nd after Election Day, but I think it's fair to say that this issue will suck up a good deal more oxygen between now and then. It is a classic sort of Liberal versus Labor battle, employers versus workers, unions versus industry groups, and it plays right into the two major parties' main campaign themes as well. So both leaders now baring their teeth, and both, I've got to say, are being a little bit disingenuous here. First to Scott Morrison, because for weeks he's now been saying that Anthony Albanese does not have a magic pen to help wages growth, saying that really only businesses can increase wages. Well, today he's saying that Mr. Albanese's support for a minimum wage increase of 5.1% or better would actually have such a big impact that it's going to throw fuel on the fire of interest rates and inflations. And he's thrown in some pretty spicy Australiana, shall we say, as well.
Anthony Albanese is a loose unit on the economy, and his thoughtlessness on this would actually make inflation worse. It would make interest rates rise even higher. It would threaten the strong growth we've had in employment. And ultimately, it would force small businesses potentially out of business altogether.
So what about Anthony Albanese? Well, today he's very much standing by his comments from yesterday, but he's saying that this is not an official Labor position or announcement. He's saying that in government, Labor wouldn't necessarily put forward a submission to Fair Work Australia for a 5.1% minimum wage increase. He was also asked if inflation was to, for example, go up to 6%, whether that would mean wages should also go up by 6%. And he's not prepared to commit to that either. So it's a little bit hard to know exactly where he stands. He is, just like Scott Morrison, though, trying to use this row to his advantage by claiming the Prime Minister wants to cut your wage.
We're talking about cleaners. We're talking about retail workers. We're talking about people really struggling to get by. It's not enough. It is not enough to say, thank you for what you did getting us through the pandemic, and then say, we want to cut your real wage. That is what Scott Morrison is saying.
That's the Labor leader, Anthony Albanese, there. And David Lipson, what are party operatives saying behind the scenes about what's going on?
Yeah, this is where it's quite interesting, because I've spoken to a few MPs this morning, and both sides are saying that this battle works to their advantage. Labor's saying this is exactly the space that they wanted to be in the final 10 days of the campaign, that Anthony Albanese deliberately chose to detonate this issue now so that they could have this fight, and pointed out they've been running ads on wages and the like. Liberal MPs reckon it plays well for them in the seats, particularly that Labor is trying to win, especially with small business owners who may be worried about rising business costs through wage increases. And also, they believe it plays well for them amongst anyone older than about 50 years old, that is anyone who remembers the 70s and 80s, when sure, wages did rise, but so did inflation, so did cost of living, and so did interest rates right up to 19%. So, like I said at the start, I guess we'll wait till Election Day to see how this lands.
David, thank you. That's our political reporter, David Lipson. What about big business? Business lobby groups warn that Anthony Albanese's support for a 5% increase in the minimum wage is excessive, unsustainable, and will force the Reserve Bank to raise interest rates more aggressively. For more, I spoke a short time ago to our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, good afternoon. If 5.1% is too much, what do employer groups want to be seen given as the cost of living increases?
Well, good afternoon, Sally. There's no doubt that inflation is burning a hole in the pay packets of workers, and that's something that big employer groups acknowledge in their submissions to the Independent Fair Work Commission, which has the final say on the minimum wage rather than governments. But their proposal for any wage increase is a lot less than the 5.1% annual inflation rate or the 5.5% wages boost the ACTU is demanding. The Australian Industry Group is backing a 2.5% wage increase. That's an extra $19.30 a week to minimum wage workers. They say anything higher would only stoke inflation. The Reserve Bank would be forced to react with steeper interest rates, meaning higher payments for mortgages mortgages, personal loans and credit cards, and a hammer blow for employers who could go to the wall. The Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry thinks a minimum wage increase of up to 3% is reasonable, given inflationary pressures not seen for some time. ACCI Chief Executive Andrew McKellar warns employers also have to deal with higher compulsory superannuation costs for workers down the track, and anything beyond 3% would be irresponsible and unsustainable.
Any outcome that we have has got to balance the fact that costs are rising right across the economy. We have to be responsible. We have to try to get inflation back down in the 2 to 3% target range that the Reserve Bank has set.
But if we've got inflation of around 5% looking at the annual rate at the moment, isn't 3% pretty much undershooting that?
No, look, what we've got to do is we've got to try and take that pressure out of the economy. You've got to remember there are other benefits coming through to workers to help offset the cost of living. There are changes in terms of tax. There are offsets there. And in addition, there's additional superannuation. The superannuation guarantee goes up by another 0.5% from the 30th of June. Those are certainly costs that employers will have to bear.
Just looking at Anthony Albanese's comments about inflation, 5.1%, saying that he thinks that wages should match that. Is that sustainable?
It's not sustainable. I think that's the risk that the economy faces at the moment. If we keep feeding more cost into the economy, that's exactly the risk that we face. And we have to remember, at the end of the day, all Australians lose if inflation keeps going up and if interest rates have to go up further.
That's Andrew McKellar there from the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And Peter Ryan, what do economists think about linking wages to the 5.1% inflation rate, which Anthony Albanese has endorsed?
Well, not very likely, Sally, because something as big as a 5% rise in wages would only contribute to inflation, and the Reserve Bank would need to raise interest rates even more aggressively to get inflation back into the 2 to 3% target band. But here's another important reality check. At the moment, we're talking about the minimum wage for workers, but according to the Australian Financial Review's CEO survey out late last year, company bosses saw their pay packets rise by an average of more than 20% in the year to June, partly thanks to soaring share prices. So lots of zeros in those CEO pay packets, but that clearly leaves a sour taste for workers struggling with household budgets.
Peter Ryan. You're listening to The World Today. The safe LNP-held seat of Hinkler in central Queensland has been touted as an unexpected election battleground. That's because long-term MP and Resources Minister Keith Pitt is being challenged by Bundaberg Mayor and former LNP State Minister Jack Dempsey, who's running as an independent. But on the ground, local politics are complicated. John Daly reports from the seat of Hinkler.
A constant stream of voters walk through the rain to a pre-poll booth in Bundaberg, in the key regional Queensland seat of Hinkler.
Playing Liberal all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't make it any worse than what it is. Better the devil you know than the devil you don't. So
I'll be voting for the United Australia Party. Yeah, I think they've cheated everyone by just lying to them all the time, you know, but now they're trying to make up for it.
Labor.
Why is that?
Because they're going to make everything cheaper.
Hinkler runs along the Queensland coast from Hervey Bay to Bundaberg and inland to Childers. It's been a coalition stronghold since the 1990s, and the incumbent MP and Resources Minister, Keith Pitt, holds it with a large margin of 14.5%. This would usually make it a safe bet for the Liberal National Party. But this time around, the contest has gained a lot more attention as former LNP State Minister and Bundaberg Mayor Jack Dempsey is running as an independent against his former political ally. It seems Jack Dempsey's performance as mayor is a big factor, for better or worse.
Well, I like him. He's for this area, you know. He's been a mayor for years and he just seems to say the right things, like some of them. Once they get in, that's it, you know. But him, I think he's really serious about it, doing things for the area.
Jack's all over the country. One minute he's an LNP and next minute he's something else and now he's running as an independent, you know. And I don't believe that I'm going to sacrifice Keith Pitt for Jack Dempsey.
It's a seat heavily reliant on healthcare, agriculture, mining and manufacturing sectors. Jack Dempsey is trying to challenge the Nationals' brand in the farming communities of Hinkler, arguing the party has turned its back on the region's agricultural industry and now supports mining. In the nearby sugarcane production areas of the seat, water security and dam politics are key issues. Mitch Chapman is a young sugarcane farmer who's been won over by the LNP's funding and support for the restoration of the local Paradise Dam, a key piece of water infrastructure for farmers.
Just from probably what the LNP's done the groundwork for the likes of Paradise Dam and stuff, that they've probably got a bit more of an advantage, but definitely if that wasn't in there, I wouldn't have a problem with Jack either, but I think they've just got the bit of the advantage at the moment.
Yeah, just down there on the side. Oh, sorry, yeah.
Back in Bundaberg, local newsagent Bronwyn Palmer thinks there's a lot more undecided voters in Hinkler this election. She's one of them.
The majority are the same as me. You get your Labor voters, they're going to stick to Labor. But the ones that used to go the Liberal, they're sitting on the fence. But they're saying the same as me. They don't like Albanese. They don't like how that's going. So they're a bit on the fence. I don't know. There's a lot more undecided this year than there ever has been other years. Yes, I think One Nation might do a little bit better, because there's so much undecided between the two big parties.
Both the United Australia Party and One Nation are preferencing Keith Pitt over Labor candidate Jason Skains and independent Jack Dempsey, which could be important come election day.
That's John Daly reporting. There's a new chapter in the bitter racism row between former AFL player Heritia Lumumba and the Collingwood Football Club. Lumumba has released audio recordings of conversations with former coach Nathan Buckley, who allegedly accused him of throwing the then club boss Eddie Maguire under the bus. In 2013, Lumumba spoke out against Eddie Maguire's comments, likening Adam Goods to King Kong. The club is under pressure to right the wrongs of the past. Carly Williams reports.
Harry O'Brien heads for goal.
Heritia Lumumba played 199 games for Collingwood Football Club and was the star of the club's 2010 premiership. But the celebrated player says he endured a culture of racist jokes while playing for Collingwood from 2005 to 2014, including a racist nickname used by other players. Lumumba's experiences of racism at the Magpies launched the independent Do Better Review, which found systemic racism within Collingwood and called for the problem to be addressed. Now the relationship between the defender and his former club has soured further, with new claims of toxic culture and the release of recorded conversations between Lumumba and his former coach Nathan Buckley. Lumumba says releasing the audio is his way of healing.
How can I turn this around? How can I turn trauma and traumatizing experiences and memories into healing? And so I actively went on a journey to strategize and to find a way where I could basically reclaim my power, turn trauma into me having the options and the power of choice, which is, you know, what I've exercised in recent days.
The conversations in the recordings are about an incident in 2013. Then Collingwood president Eddie Maguire said on radio that Sydney Swan star Adam Goods, who has also suffered racism within the AFL, should be used to publicise the musical King Kong.
What a great promo that is for King Kong. Get Adam Goods down for it, do you reckon? No, I
no.
thought so. Or you, absolutely no.
you can see them doing it, can't you?
Good. What's that?
Saying the pumping them up and mucking around, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Heritia Lumumba says he was given permission by the Magpies to speak about it at the time. He did, but he criticised Eddie Maguire. It's something Lumumba says he was ostracised for. He alleges former coach Nathan Buckley accused him of going rogue at the time and throwing Maguire under the bus. This was recorded in 2014, just before Lumumba was traded.
I've gone through this whole year, and this is part of my issue, because you still believe that. And that's what hurts me so much, Bucks.
Heritia Lumumba says the recordings are evidence the Pies did not support him when he spoke out against Eddie Maguire's notorious King Kong comments, even though he had permission. The 2013 incident was the beginning of a dark journey for Lumumba and the Pies.
I went to the club, the media department. There were a few key officials there, and I asked them if I could make a comment. And, you know, they gave me the green light to do so. After that, I found out very quickly that I made the wrong comments, according to them. They actually thought I was going to support Eddie in some way, shape or form. And, you know, as a result of that, I was punished for the remainder of my time at Collingwood for that.
Haritia Lumumba believes Collingwood's conduct left him with no choice but to release the recordings.
I had to do that because I saw the dishonesty firsthand. And, you know, I have not released the full versions because it would be countless hours. What I would say to Nathan Buckley is that this is not a football match. You know, I stopped taking orders from Nathan Buckley a very long time ago. So I will share my truth as I see fit.
The World Today invited former Collingwood coach Nathan Buckley to respond to the recordings. He respectfully declined. He did post a now-deleted tweet, though. It said,
Haritia, I offer you the opportunity to put a full and uncut version of our conversations on public record so as to provide context to our conversations and the support that was provided to you above and beyond that which could be reasonably expected in the circumstances.
Collingwood has not responded to the newly released audio, but the Magpies have apologised in the past for allowing systemic racism to grow at the club. The authors of the Do Better paper reviewed the club 12 months on and said significant improvements have been made.
Carly Williams reporting, and Collingwood has released a statement saying they remain committed to a genuine outcome for any and all players that have been subject to racism at the club. Well, will the efforts of Haritia Lumumba bring about a reckoning of racial abuse at Collingwood? Award-winning ABC Sport reporter Russell Jackson has written at length about former players who have endured various kinds of abuse at several football clubs.
Well, I think what's remarkable about it as it stands is that the reckoning clearly has happened. I mean, a lot has been said about the Do Better report. The report was clear that Collingwood should make amends to wrong parties, not just with apologies, but compensation for the horrific things that happened to them and were said about them. But since the day of the report's release, there's been no discussion of that at all.
What do you think about that?
Well, I'll give you an example. In 1980, St Kilda's Aboriginal star Robert Muir was subjected to an entire afternoon of racist abuse from opponents and fans over the fence at Victoria Park. A mob of racist fans encircled the change rooms chanting at him, which newspaper reporters later described that as akin to a pack of hyenas. And on the way out of the ground, one of those fans smashed a bottle across Muir's car windscreen. We fast forward to now, and there's actually not been a single word from Collingwood to Rob about what they might do to put that right.
How important is it for AFL to get this stuff right now, to face up to things that have happened?
Well, it's important for a number of reasons. It's not just an acknowledgement of the past. It's safeguarding the future and saying to an 18-year-old version of Haritia Lumumba, you will be safe in the work environment you're in. And this is a workplace safety issue. And something I think there's been a lot of focus in the last 24 hours about the recordings themselves and something about the recordings that Lumumba posted. What must it be like to feel so isolated and undermined by your employer that you need to keep recordings of conversations with them just to protect yourself? You know, to me, the existence of the recordings is almost more compelling than their contents, because that's a workplace safety issue. And clearly he didn't feel safe in that environment.
From the interviews that you've done with former players who've experienced racial abuse or sexual abuse or other issues, what sense do you get of the later life consequences of things that have happened and not been addressed?
This does harm not just to the players themselves, but to their families. It takes enormous courage and stamina for one man to stand up against these powerful institutions, and he's trying to change them for the better. But that's a lonely and exhausting battle, and it's cost him and his family dearly. So for more than a decade, really, he's been a victim of constant character assassinations in the football world and in the media. And to be hounded like that is an experience that few people understand. The second thing I'd say is that I've interviewed hundreds of sports people and found few of them as intelligent and principled as Lumumba. And this is an issue of principles. Keep in mind that he's trying to fix this for an 18-year-old version of himself that might arrive at that club next year.
That's ABC sports journalist Russell Jackson. Well, that's all from the World Today for this Wednesday. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening. We'll be back again at the same time tomorrow. I'm Sally Sarah. Stay safe and enjoy your afternoon.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Vladimir Putin's Victory Day speech failed to deliver what some experts expected, the announcement of the mass mobilization of millions of Russians to fight in the war in Ukraine. Today, former US State Department official and Russia policy expert Max Bergman on Putin's highly anticipated speech and how the war will end. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.